I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hey everyone, it's Joshy here. You can find me on Twitter at @doc_mufc. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the chat.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jake. I'm a Newcastle fan, and you can get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We were a little worried about getting guests with literally every place in the Premier League table up for grabs, save for Chelsea, who were the only ones that came in locked in at third. But very glad that both of you were able to make it today. I figure we just got to start off by talking about the day and the season on the whole. Obviously, the 21-22 Premier League season comes to a close with today's matches. What were you most surprised by today in terms of a result or in terms of league finish overall?
I think for today, when you think about the results, to be honest, the end results, I don't think there was anything too surprising, like going through the fixtures. I mean, at the start of the day, you'd have expected City and Liverpool to have both won and finished that way, although the way it went, that was surprising. Villa taking a two-goal lead, wasn't expecting that. Thought there was a Steven Gerrard story in the making here, but luckily, as a United fan, that didn't happen. And again, when you look through some of the other results, I think probably Brighton beating West Ham is one that's maybe mildly surprising. As a Man United fan, I fully expected United to lose and be dumped into the Conference League, but it turned out not to go that way. So, you know, in terms of those individual results, not too many surprises today, I don't think. Overall for the season, again, I think West Ham, you saw their finish at the end of last year, but I think they're probably, in terms of where they've ended up, what maybe one of the surprises. But again, broadly speaking, I think Everton being 16th, I don't think was in many people's kind of books, they were very close to that relegation this season, which I don't know that at the beginning of the year people would have predicted. But overall, I think, to be honest, the Premier League is broadly predictable. I mean, there's not too much you could sort of say in terms of league where you go, they're not in the right spot, right? Spurs and Arsenal, there's a much about them. And Spurs finished fourth, Arsenal finished fifth. But as you look through the league table, it's really Man City and Liverpool are streets ahead of everyone else. Chelsea are probably in that next tier. And then everybody else, you could probably switch them around a bit. There's not too much. I just don't think the quality of the league is that good. And you wouldn't be surprised if you could interchange a lot of those clubs with one another. I mean, the fact that this Man United team finished sixth is indicative of how poor this league is. Like, it's the worst Man United team I've watched and in my lifetime, sort of 38 years or whatever it's been watching United. It's the worst team that I've watched and certainly the most unlikable with a zero goal difference. So, and they finished sixth. It tells you exactly what you need to know about this league. So I think broadly, I'm not super surprised about much of what happened today or really how I obviously wanted United to build on their second place last year. But, as we got through about a quarter of the season, I knew it just wasn't going to happen. There's just nothing in this side. So, yeah, overall, unfortunately, not a great surprise and unfortunately not a super high quality league, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I do agree with a lot of that. I think today was the surprise with Wolves and Villa scoring first, then obviously Villa scoring another one. And at that point, I thought it was Liverpool's week to lose, and as soon as he came back, and it was sort of reminiscent of when Aguero scored that goal. Nothing not as dramatic, but it was very reminiscent. But apart from that, I don't think there was a great deal of surprise. And sort of following up on what Josh, you said about the quality of the league, is the fact that Newcastle finished 11th in this league after not winning until December is very bad on the league. Like, that shouldn't happen. I think there's just a lot of teams that are going through the motions in this league. And you saw Leicester finishing 8th as well. They've been terrible for most of the season. They finished 8th. It doesn't speak well for a lot of the teams in the league. I think Villa spent a lot of money in the summer. They were sort of quite ambitious and they didn't get close to finishing that high. Brighton often talks about as a great team and great to watch, but again, they didn't really get close to challenging for those European spots. One surprise to me was probably Wolves finishing 10th. I think that's a strange position for them after being so high, but they have also been terrible for half the season, so you can't really complain too much of that. It's just been a strange season. It just feels like the Premier League now is difficult to compete with the top six, and it's also difficult to go down if you're bad. It just feels like a lot of teams just clogging up the league. You look at Leeds managing to stay up. They've been quite bad for most of the season. Southampton have been terrible for the last 3 months. They've stayed up. Everton as well couldn't have had a worse season and yet not going down. It just feels like the league is not very good at the moment. And there's a lot of bad teams staying up, and there's a lot of bad teams sort of milling around the European places. It was an entertaining last day purely for what happened in those games involving Liverpool, Man City, but ultimately the results were how we all expected them to go. So yeah, it was an entertaining last day, but also nothing happened that was that surprising.
Yeah, I think the maybe biggest surprise for me was Leeds just outright beating Brentford, who had been on a really good roll there to ensure their safety. And obviously they scored pretty late to make sure it was a win, but they didn't need it at that point, I don't believe, as Burnley were losing to your Newcastle there, Jake. But yeah, Leeds staying up, I think, was probably outside of obviously someone won the title, someone made top four, obviously City and Spurs there respectively. But I think Leeds winning to stay up is probably the next biggest story. And I think you're right. There are a lot of teams that were not very good that managed to stay up. And it kind of feels like there's this middle class in between the Championship and the Premier League, where like four or five teams just keep switching between the two. Obviously still pending the Championship playoff final, which is still to come, which could throw a bit of a wrench into that idea. But Watford and Norwich coming up and then immediately going back down, I don't think that shocked really anyone. A lot of people were worried about Burnley coming into the season. I think a lot of people were also worried about Palace, the way they had their like massive squad overhaul and bringing in Vieira, who hadn't coached it in the Premier League. But obviously they ended up being perfectly fine in 12th. And you're not wrong, Jake. Southampton, no wins in their last five, four of them being losses, is pretty rough. And on this show, we've largely praised Ralf Hasenhüttl when things have gone even slightly well. But I think that's now three finishes, 15th or lower, since he joined, which is not very promising for them. But yeah, ultimately, I am interested in you guys both saying that you think the quality of the league overall is down, because it was super entertaining as a final day. And throughout the season, there were a lot of teams battling for a lot of things. But are we just thinking that it's the players or the managers, or why do we feel like it's either a down year or a down period in the league overall?
I just look at Arsenal and Tottenham going for that fourth position. I don't think either team has been very good this season, so for them to finish there. I think there's a lot of good managers in the league, but I think that there's obviously a lot of good players as well. I think it's definitely the best league in Europe when you look at the quality of each team. I think Watford have got a lot of good players. I think Burnley have got some good players. Obviously Leeds have got Rafinha and Calvin Phillips, the player that got to the European Championship final last year. There's good players in the league. I just don't see a lot of good teams. And Tottenham to get fourth is a little bit of a disgrace. Manchester United struggling really after spending a lot of money in the summer. People talking about title contenders, they weren't really close to that. I think there's a lot of inconsistency in a lot of the teams in this league, and it makes me struggle to really see many good teams. Like, if you ask me who are the good teams in this league, I'd probably say Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea, and I'd probably go down to like Brighton and Newcastle post the Eddie Howe appointment. And then after that, I just don't really see it. I don't think Tottenham are that great of a team. I think they're built around two players. I don't think Arsenal are that good. If they'd have lost today, it would have been the most losses they've ever had in Premier League season. So can't really talk about them as a good team. It's close to the worst team in their own history. I can't really put my finger on why I think it's been a bad season, but there's just not a lot that I look at and think, yeah, it's been really good. Even Wolves, we would have spoken about as a good team previously, but they finished 10th and they've had an awful second half of the season, so it's difficult to really buy into them either. But probably West Ham being a little bit unfair too. They've had a good year, but it's just been two teams dominating the league, Chelsea being fine, and then a couple of teams outside of that doing quite well at certain periods. But it's difficult to say exactly why, but I'm not completely buying it as a watcher of the Premier League.
Yeah, I just think the overall quality is really poor, and then you've got two teams that are really good. I think when you look at this, when you look around the teams, a lot of them are in transition, or they've had some kind of overhaul, or there's been something that's been going on, right? So, and that actually you can say that across Europe, right? A lot of teams are, like if you look at the Spanish league, even Real Madrid and Barcelona, they're kind of in between these cycles when they were great, and now they're sort of rebuilding a little bit. And I think that's true of a lot of clubs around Europe, and actually a lot true about a lot of clubs in the Premier League. So, you know, this is Conte's first season at Tottenham. Well, it's not even a full season, right, at Tottenham. So, you know, that's a kind of a transition piece. I don't think Arteta is a top-tier manager. I think he'll get found out much in the way that Solskjaer did. And you go through the league, I think there are some really solid managers and decent-ish teams. But when you think about the overall quality, you know, it's really poor. And I don't think that even if you look at the City team and the Liverpool team, right, as good as Liverpool have been and City, these aren't even the best Liverpool and City sides that I've watched. They're not the best that we've seen from City in the past is, you know, that company Touré, Yaya Touré, Aguero team. That was a proper team. That team would walk all over this side. I just think that they're just a lot better than everyone else in the league, and they just pick up points easily because just the rest of the league is so poor, and so they build through. Liverpool, I think there's a case for this team being really good, but again, I think it's more the case that everyone else is so poor. I mean, they won the two finals on penalties. Yes, they've got another final to go to. So yes, I'm not trying to downplay the achievements, but ultimately they haven't won the league. And the City side, I don't think, are even the best City side that I've watched. And overall, going through, is there anyone in the league that you could say the team is the best team of their kind of, even if you said the last 10 years? Is this the best Chelsea side we've seen in the last 10 years? Is this the best Tottenham side we've seen in the last 10 years? Arsenal, United, just go through the league. And I think the answer is no. I just think everyone is at a point of some kind of rebuild. Potentially, you could say maybe West Ham. But then
I think Brighton too. I think Brighton.
Brighton are. Brighton. Yes, they're good for their relative size and who they are. But you wouldn't say they're a top level side, right? When you're talking about absolute terms. But yeah, no, you're right. They are. I mean, they absolutely humbled us, right? So they're a good side in that regard. But yeah, just overall, the quality of this Premier League is just nowhere near the top that we've seen. When you talk about the height of quality, this is nowhere near that. So it doesn't mean it's not entertaining, right? That doesn't mean it's not entertaining. And United have been battered many times by teams. You know, I'm sure loads of teams have had, so there's been loads of great matches, you know, but in terms of overall actual footballing quality, it's not up there.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure some people listening are going to be surprised to hear that, because basically all year people have been talking about how great the season was. But I think you made a good delineation between what is entertaining and what is air quotes good. And Jake, I still think one of your earlier points is true, that I still think it's probably the best league going at present, just because anyone can beat anyone. But maybe that is because the quality levels have dropped. City obviously win the title today. That's 4-5 for Pep Guardiola and co, which is pretty wild in and of itself. It also led to a pitch invasion, the third of the week, if memory serves. And in all three, there was an incident with a player on the other side or manager either being harassed or attacked. And I was just curious your guys' thoughts on pitch invasions as a general practice, and if there's some way to make it more safe, or if there just needs to be, you know, far more security or far stricter rules that prevent it from happening.
Yeah, look, I think it's a case of player safety now. I mean, I understand the emotions run high, and you know, I'm not saying I've ever stormed a pitch. I haven't done, but I can understand in a certain situation, people going into just losing their minds a bit and running onto the pitch, and they want to celebrate and sort of be part of something great. That being said, it only works if you don't act like an idiot, and it's always the minority, right, that spoil it for the majority. And you can talk about it. It doesn't necessarily mean, it's not just about football, it's about sort of almost anything you can describe. There's always the small group, and you have to cater for that small group. So now it's a case of, right, we now have to make sure that this never happens again. So you've got to put really strong sanctions in, you've got to make sure it never happens again, you punish those clubs. And eventually fans will self-police, right? Because it's very difficult to just have barriers up or enough security to stop it from happening. You've probably got to end up punishing those clubs and severely, like points deductions, right? Not now, because I don't think that's the rules, but going forward to deter it, you've got to do something like that, because just because some of the fans are idiots and they cut off and they do these stupid things. And the more people do it, we know this, people will start escalating. Things will escalate. And then someone will have another idea to go on and do something even more idiotic. And we've seen Billy Sharp was manager, right? Or coach or whatever. He got headbutted. Patrick Vieira getting goaded on the pitch. That could have escalated. Then there was another one with an Everton fan with the flares in front of one of the Palace players. And then apparently today you guys told me the Villa keeper got attacked. So eventually, if you keep allowing this to happen, people will escalate. It's just the way human beings are. And it will get worse and worse until something really bad happens. So you've just got to sort of nip in the bud and start imposing really harsh sanctions on the clubs. And then eventually fans will self-police. Like, if you know that your team will get deducted 3 points or 6 points or whatever it is, and you spot your mate about to jump in, you'd say, well, you'd make sure it doesn't happen, right? Because that's what the fans think about. Their club and their team is the greatest of all time to everyone. And if you lose the points, that's worse than actually the consequences of going on and assaulting someone. So prison time or that kind of thing, as a fan base, you don't really care. But if you're talking about sanctioning the club and points and stuff, they do. It's just the way it is, unfortunately. So I'd go with some harsh sanctions, even though I do kind of understand why people want to do it. They want to be part of the celebration. They want to be on the pitch and be a piece of history and be a part of history. But there's always the minority who ruin it for the rest of the guys who might be out there doing it in a celebratory kind of way. So you just got to come down hard on it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, it's been going on for a long time, but it's only really this season that things like these assaults and players have been happening. You often see fans going onto the pitch and see the opposition player sort of downtrodden, sort of on the ground. But I don't think I remember a case of the opposition player being attacked prior to the last few weeks. And it feels like the fact that it's been in the news so much is sort of encouraging other fans to do the same, which is just strange. Like today, Robin Olsen, there was a couple of fans that sort of went up to him and attacked him. And I think the good thing about City today was there were stewards right on the pitch. So a steward had Robert Olsen before a fan came up to him, but they were just not in a position to stop any sort of assault going on, which it is just really sad to see. I don't know if I'd recommend points deductions for any sort of pitch invasion, although I can see why you would perhaps do that. But if there is an assault or anything like that, definitely points deductions. I think that Nottingham Forest should if they lose their place in the playoff final because of that assault, I don't think I'd disagree with that. The same with Benalton today. If Manchester City would drop points and then win the league, I don't think I'd be opposed to that. It is just disgraceful behaviour. As a fan of a club, I can't imagine me being in that position where I've just got through to a playoff final or won the league, and then I can't imagine what goes through your head to then want to assault an opposition player. Surely you're just so high on the jubilation of what your own team has done that the opposition become quite irrelevant at that point. It does seem to be a big issue. I think the coverage of it, although it's bringing awareness of the issues of the pitch invasion, is perhaps even encouraging further cases of the same thing. I'm not convinced that Robin Olsen would have been assaulted had there been no coverage of the issues of the pitch invasions in the last few weeks at Everton and then at obviously at Nottingham Forest. I don't think that the same would have happened. So strange people are odd, and they see themselves there in an opportunity to do the same thing, and they'll do it. It is horrible, and I'm not sure what the answer is. I think perhaps pitch invasions for points deductions for any pitch invasion might just be the way forward, because even though I disagree with it, because the pitch invasions have previously been quite a harmless thing, maybe that it needs to be that strong to prevent any sort of harm to the players. The players they're at the place of work. They should never be under threat of physical harm. I think that's disgusting. It's very difficult. I see why people want to get on the pitch. I mean, at the Aguero goal a few seasons ago, I don't think that the City fans had a pitch invasion. It seems to be the end thing. And sad how it ended up today. They really should have been better. They've seen the coverage of what happened at Everton and Nottingham Forest, and yet they've done the same thing and sort of soured the occasion.
No, exactly, and that's why I think you need to come down on it quite hard, right? Because, like you say, I think these people see. First of all, this is not you wouldn't say this is normal fan behaviour, because even I've been involved in. I've gone to matches where United have come back and won, won the from 2-0 down, won the game. You're sort of ecstatic at the end of the match. Yes, I know we talk about a league title win, but it's not like every season a league title win occurs. People are running on the pitch. This is because it's happened a couple of times. The people have seen it, they do it, and then it's this: someone sees someone else get assaulted and sort of go, oh, "I can do this," and it escalates just because that's what idiots do. They see and they copy and it escalates. It's just and that's why I think you've just got to now nip it in the bud until before something really, really serious happens. And there have been like major injuries and recently some sort of crushes. And I'm not talking about now in the Premier League. I'm talking like in Germany, I think recently there have been some pretty serious incidences as well. And it's not just the players and the coaches you're trying to protect. It's also other people, other fans, right? They might not want to be part of this invasion. And you've got people trying to run through the crowds, trying to get on the pitch. And I think it was a Schalke recently. There was a fan crush, basically, lots of injuries. I don't know that there obviously nothing more serious happened. But we know we've heard things about in the past. We've seen that. And I read about a sexual assault, apparently. The woman was basically groped and attacked during one of these pitch invasions. So it's just stupidity and idiocy, and these people are just ruining it, I think, for everyone else, to be honest. And I may sound like a grump. I do understand that emotions run high, but I think when it gets out of hand like this, you're just kind of ruining it for other people as well.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I really hope that you haven't kind of prophesied what might happen, which is all of this will be discussed, nothing serious will be done, and then there will be serious harm caused to somebody. And like a player getting meaningfully hurt or, you know, something worse if weapons were involved or something like that before it's like fully stopped. Just the Premier League is always so reactive.
I was going to say, it doesn't have to be a weapon, does it? Because that you saw that Everton fan on the pitch waving those flares about. You can do serious damage with those if you stick it in someone's face. That's not a weapon. Yeah, it's totally. Not designed to be a weapon, but it's still... And this is the thing. Like, people get all sorts of things, like smug, not, you know, you're not actually allowed to have those on the in the crowd and, you know, whatever, have it in the crowd and have a bit of fun. But you just never know. There's always some idiot who'll try something and he'll get out of hand. This is just how it escalates, isn't it?
And I think the flare thing is even furthers your point about people seeing it and then doing it. I don't really remember seeing many flares at Premier League matches over the past few years. And this season, it seems like there's been some at every match when there have been big moments. So, yeah, maybe the leniency has led to too much leeway. And as you were saying, we're kind of societally in a race to the bottom right now. And I think that's just kind of being evidenced in match-going groups as well. We'll leave that there for now and move on to some player awards. I initially thought that De Bruyne and Foden had won Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year through the PFA awards, but apparently that's not true. Apparently the Premier League just has their own ones now to also go along with the Football Writers Association. So you could have three different players of the year, but these are the ones that were announced by the Premier League. And I was wondering what you guys made of De Bruyne winning player and Phil Foden winning young player of those awards.
I think reasonable choices. I think when you have seen a few comments made about De Bruyne and not really being as productive as, say, Salah in terms of goals and assists. But the thing with Kevin De Bruyne is not just his... He isn't just about his goals and assists. Not that Salah is as well, but the way he plays the game, he dictates play, he controls the game for City. When he's on it, City are on it. He's like on another level. So I think it's a reasonable choice. You could probably say the same as what I've just said about Kevin De Bruyne as Mo Salah, right? When he's on it, Liverpool are on it. And whatnot, but I think either would have been a reasonable choice. Salah is always going to get more goals and assists. De Bruyne is doesn't operate in the same area, but he's still very productive in that regard, and is a top level player. He's like one of the best midfield players we've seen in the Premier League. He's outstanding. So for me, yes, you can argue other players. Again, reasonable choice, and you'd probably say similar about Phil Foden. I think Bukayo Saka, Arsenal's had a reasonably good season. But again, Foden has been, I think he's played close to 30 times in the league this year, age of 21, in a City side that is not short of stars, right? So he's doing pretty well for himself and he's productive. He's very much part of the way City play. So again, I think reasonable choices. You could probably argue for other people as well. Like, I think Declan Rice has had a pretty good year. I'm not a massive... whenever I've watched Declan Rice play against a really top side, I haven't been super impressed. But with regards to how West Ham play and his contribution to that team and where they are in the league, he's had a very good season and he's still sort of eligible for the trophies. You could argue he should be up there. But to be honest, I think it's reasonable. Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden, they were integral to City winning the league. So, yeah, for me, no complaints. I don't think it's super controversial.
It is difficult to argue with those. So I think with Kevin De Bruyne, it's been a lot of recency bias. I think he had the best first half of the season, whereas Salah was quite sort of superhuman for the first half. But it does seem that what's happened in the last few months does impact these votes. Interesting how the PFA would go, but I'd probably guess in a similar way. I've never been really one for individual awards. I just don't really think they're that important. It's often the way that the manager of the year is the one that wins the Premier League. The player of the year comes from the team that have won the Premier League. And it's the same with the young player of the year. I think the young player of the year award is a bit of a strange one. I'd rather sort of see an award given to the sort of a player that hasn't played sort of 10 to 20 Pro Leagues games before, sort of give it sort of an Americanism, which might suit you, Kev, but sort of the rookie of the year, yeah, something like that might be a better award to give out. But yeah,
who would be your rookie of the year?
I mean, that is a great question. I don't have an answer to. I don't have an answer to. I think Jarrod Bowen for me is one that I'd love to give an individual award to. Not quite a rookie, but his achievement to West Ham, that he's got close to 30 goals and assists, which is incredible for a player playing for West Ham. I don't think we've ever seen that. I don't know, Rookie of the Year. I don't have a name for you, unfortunately.
It doesn't need to be Rookie of the Year, but like Jarrod Bowen sounds like breakthrough player of the year.
Exactly, yeah. I think he'd be a great player for an individual award. I think he's had a great season and one that nobody predicted. He scored he's got a lot of goals, got quite a few assists. He's definitely one that I'd love to see win the individual award because it's been such a great season for him. And yeah, he sort of comes away West Ham sort of qualifying for the Conference League, something that they did better than last season. He's not really winning much himself. It seems like he'd be a great case for somebody to win an individual award. But yeah, for the actual awards, it would be interesting to see if the PFA goes the same way. But Kevin De Bruyne, for me, I don't think he's had the best season. He's just had a really good 3 to 4 months. And even though 3 to 4 months, we expect from him. So yeah. Just one of those things. Foden's had a great year, but then he could probably win the Young Player of the Year again next year, which seems out there.
Connor Gallagher. If you weren't eligible, if you'd already won it, that might not be a bad little tweak.
Yeah, and Connor Gallagher for me, as Joshua just said, he'd probably be a great candidate for Rookie of the Year, as I've just put forward. I didn't have him myself, but yeah, definitely, he's had a great year. And I think that would be a great thing, Kev. If they couldn't win Young Player of the Year, if they had already won it, I think there was that sort of period where Sterling was nominated every year for about 6 or 7 years, wasn't it? It got a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Bale, Kane, and Dele were all nominated in multiple years. I don't know if any of them won it back-to-back. I think Kane's won a young and a full player. But yeah, it's very odd, and the rules are way too old. For Rookie of the Year, if you don't mind me jumping in and evangelizing for my own team too much, Dejan Kulusevski ended the season with 5 goals and 9 assists and entered the league in the last week of January, and still just 21, may have turned 22 since joining. But there's a shout for that. And I also was planning on being, righteous fury-y about Son not even being nominated for Player of the Year here, considering he just was joint with Salah for the Golden Boot. But I do also want to mention that people may have heard me talk about this on the show. Son basically wasn't good from like October to December. He just kept scoring goals. And then at some point eventually found the form while the goals kept coming. So some of those goals kind of masked performances that were a little bit iffy. But not very often do you end up with somebody with the Golden Boot not even being nominated. But as Jake says, we'll wait to see what the official PFA ones are. I still wonder if that's the one people are going to take more seriously other than the Premier League just deciding to kind of have their own. But I guess we'll see on that. I figure we'll wrap up this section by just asking you guys, what was your favorite club and or league moment of the year?
Oh my God, I don't have that many to pick from.
Well, you had two very exciting wins against Tottenham, one of which gave us the manager we needed. Yeah.
I mean, I guess Cristiano Ronaldo's hat-trick against Spurs was pretty great. But I wouldn't call it necessarily a highlight. We sort of watched that, but we still sort of went, yeah, we're still shit. There's no, like, we're still a poor team. So if I think back, it would probably be Cristiano Ronaldo scoring 2 goals against Newcastle towards the beginning of the season, because it was kind of like, oh, he's not lost it. One of them was where he picked it up, one touch, pace, bang, left foot, and it was kind of, we still had hope at that stage of the season. So for me, it felt like a highlight at the time, although of course it didn't mean anything in the end because United had been really poor. But at the time, we were thinking, "Ooh, this could be something cool to watch with Cristiano Ronaldo spearheading a challenge for us." So I'll pick that as my highlight of the season. I think that was at the early part of September, so that's a long time ago. But that would be a time of hope and obviously a nice comfortable win for us, so I'll pick that.
Yeah, I think club of the season, I think Brentford have been a great story. They've come up to the league and sort of stabilising and doing very well. You've obviously got Christian Eriksen there as well, which is a nice sort of side story to what's happened in the Premier League this year. Obviously, the best moment for me this year has been Newcastle being taken over. Obviously, I have my own issues with the owners that we have now, but under Mike Ashley, it's just a joyless experience of supporting the club, and the fact that now we don't have that, and we've got owners that are ambitious and trying to move things on. And I think if you look at the last 19 games of the season, which would represent half of the season, Newcastle would be third in that league table. So that sort of shows the impact the new ownership, the new signings Eddie Howe has made, and sort of gives us a glimpse of what can happen in the future. Like if we're performing that sort of form now, if we sign three or four more very good players like Bruno Guimaraes, where could we be next season? And as we spoke about earlier, the Premier League is not very good at the moment, so it wouldn't really take much for Newcastle to then be challenging for European positions. I'd love to finish to qualify for the Europa League next year, but even the Champions League doesn't seem that much beyond us at this point if we maintain that level of form and that consistency. So yeah, definitely got to be the takeover for me as the moment of the year. But for club of the year, got to be Brentford. I think they've had a great season. And great to see a club that could come up through the league. So they were not in League Two too long ago. And I don't think they've got the money behind them that Bournemouth did when they came up at the time, relative to the Premier League. Bournemouth had quite a lot of money in their ownership. So they Brentford have got the same. And I think that they've gone about it the right way. They use analytics. They're quite shrewd about how they scout. They've carried a manager with them. I think he first became assistant coach to Dean Smith, became manager, got them promoted, and now he's stabilised them in the Premier League, got nominated for Manager of the Year. It is a fantastic story, and it's an example to those clubs that are maybe perhaps League Two, League One, Championship. You can get into the Premier League and you can stabilise there. You don't need to spend loads of money to do it. So yeah, it's a great story, and one that's a massive win against sort of modern football.
Yeah, for me, I think mine's off the pitch as well. Or I guess technically it was on it. It was Nuno's substitution of Lucas for Bergwijn after Lucas was actually having a pretty decent match. And then after that match, I hopped on Twitter and said that there was no point in keeping Nuno Espirito Santo as manager because Tottenham were literally bad in every category and every statistic you could look up. And I got a lot of people like telling me that I was being too reactionary and that they were surprised in me. As somebody that used to work in the industry, that I would, you know, fall to such narratives and stuff. And then I woke up to the news that Nuno got sacked and that it led to the hiring of Antonio Conte. So that whole thing was pretty interesting. And again, kind of thanks to Joshi in that regard, that if United had lost that match, they might have pulled the trigger on Conte. Although apparently there was some stuff between Ronaldo and Conte that may have prevented that from happening anyway. But that helped us get Conte. Jake helped us get top four. I'm very appreciative of the two people on this show today and their clubs.
Can I change my highlight?
You sure can.
I'm going to change my highlight to my son. I got signed up for our local club team in Switzerland. And he played his first tournament at the weekend. They played 8 and won 8. And in the first match, they won 18-2, and he scored 7. So that'll be my highlight of the season. So
pretty reminiscent of De Gea's comments about the end of the season, which we'll get to in the club section. But yes, I think if we're doing off Premier League pitch stuff, that's definitely a worthy inclusion. on the pitch, I'd say Kane's header against City to make it 6 points that we took off of City this year was pretty incredible. And Jake already mentioned the non-Tottenham one, which was Christian Eriksen coming back. And in when Eriksen played Tottenham, he took a corner and he was getting chanted incredibly loudly, so that was nice. But also that first moment of him just first coming back on the pitch, and then he still got some goals, got some assists. Ivan Toney really thrived basically the second Eriksen started playing meaningfully for Brentford. But all of those I found to be pretty great stories. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. Joshy, I wasn't kidding. We'll start off with the David De Gea quote, which was, "The best thing that happened today was that the season ended," which feels like a super scathing review of what happened at United this year. Obviously, a lot of people felt you'd be in the top four with some of the big-name signings that you'd brought in attack, in defense, and not so much the midfield, which might have been the problem. I was just curious from you, is that like the resounding feeling of United fans, just that you're glad that it's over and that you can just look forward to whatever's coming under Ten Hag?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's not quite over. We are still emotionally invested in the Champions League final. So, you know, we're hoping for a Benzema masterclass to cement his Ballon d'Or in that one. But yeah, focusing on actually the actual club, yeah, absolutely. This has been one of those seasons where, I mean, look, it's all relative, obviously. We finished sixth, right? And for a lot of clubs, that would be great. But in terms of I don't want to say the expectation, but when you spend the amount of money that this club has spent since, I don't know, in the last 7 or 8 years, you would expect that you've got a squad that's, you know, built to challenge. And we're not talking small, we're not talking chump change, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions spent in that time. And you've got an absolutely broken squad. And you could see there's some players where you could just see they just switched off, like, you know, for whatever reason. I think Marcus Rashford is mentally, there's something not right there. He looks like a broken man, not just a broken footballer. I think there's something going on there. He needs help. The likes of Jesse Lingard, just when they play, just no effort. And then these are some of the fringe players, but then like Bruno Fernandes, who's should be one of our best players. Absolutely shocking season from him in terms of his individual performances. I mean, I would say there's probably two players or three players that in any other season wouldn't be at risk of leaving the club. Like David De Gea, he's the one that made that comment. But if it wasn't for the fact that the entire team is a disaster zone, he would be one of the first people that would be out. So if you, for example, you put David De Gea, you swapped him into the City team or the Liverpool team, you would be upgrading him. He's a good player, but he's not up at the elite level. Luckily for him, if he wants to stay at United, that luckily for him, there are so many areas in this squad where we lack quality and quantity that it would be foolish to start looking at upgrading De Gea, because at least he's good. You know, you can look across into the central midfield. I don't think we have that many good players. Certainly nobody in that elite level. And when you look across the squad, I'd say, you know, the only player that's really come out of this season without a tarnished reputation is Cristiano Ronaldo. And he's, what, 37 years old, 38 years old? He had a bit of a dip, but in the end, still our top scorer, still, you know, banged in a couple of hat tricks, won us points, several winners throughout the season. So he's 38 years old. You'd say Jadon Sancho is he hasn't lit the Premier League alight, but you can see flashes, so you keep him. Then beyond that, Rafael Varane, you kind of say, okay, fair enough, the whole team was rubbish this whole year. We know you've got quality because we've seen it in the past. Give him another chance to sort of bring that through in the next year. Beyond that, I can't think of too many. Anthony Elanga, because he's a young guy and he does put an effort in, right? That's the thing with him. The most damning indictment of this squad is that when Juan Mata has been playing in the last few weeks, he has put in more effort and shown more desire than anybody else I've seen this whole season. And that guy, when he runs, he looks like he's going backwards. His legs have gone, right? So I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of this team go. And then what we've got to do is in this summer, we shouldn't be building towards a title challenging team, right? We shouldn't be going out going, here's 150 million and signing two players, if we even have 150. But if we do have, say, that level of money, we should be signing a lot of players who are going to give you that sort of 7 out of 10 every week solid performance as we build back that base and the foundation of the squad. Get into that sort of top four space and then start adding in those sprinkles of quality. It's a bit, I guess, a bit like what Liverpool have done since Klopp, where they signed the likes of Mane. You know, he wasn't a fashionable signing when they got him from Southampton. So you do need a coach who can bring the best out of these players. But then they added in the top level quality, like shelling out a ton of cash for the likes of Van Dijk, Alisson, Luis Diaz. You know, they've added in those top level quality players, but they built that foundation through excellent coaching, obviously, and astute signings. Whilst United have been trying to sort of fix gaps with what they consider to be big marquee signings, but they're not doing it to any kind of blueprint or structure or sort of plan or strategy. So you end up with a bunch of players who just don't complement each other and really don't. There's a mishmash of nonsense throughout the team. So, yeah, to answer your question, we're done with this season. I'm looking forward to seeing what Ten Hag can do. To be fair, I don't know a huge deal about him. I know I've watched that Ajax side. They look very good. But I always feel like Ajax are a system club. So you need that infrastructure. You need that everyone is on the same page. That's why a lot of their players, when they leave the club, haven't really gone on to do super well. So, you know, De Ligt at Juventus hasn't really shone, and he was their captain. He was their, like, jewel. Frankie de Jong at Barcelona, I think he's done okay, but he hasn't really sort of, again, hit the same heights. We all know Donny van de Beek at United has been poor. Ziyech at Chelsea, again, he's been in and out the side. So I do wonder whether Ten Hag can, I know he's a manager, not a player, but whether he also needs that kind of system and infrastructure around him to allow him to build the squad. We'll see if he's allowed that. So, you know, you have to be optimistic. Otherwise, what's the point in being a fan? And it is a fresh start, so at least we come in with a bit of fresh hope. And he does have pedigree, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. But he's got a massive job on his hands. I don't rate this team in terms of mentality, in terms of their attitude and their application. Yes, they've got talent, but we know that talent only gets you so far. And this team finishing sixth, I would say that is a false position. This is a team that would have been flirting with the bottom end of the table if it wasn't for individual moments of brilliance from the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo throughout the season. So there's a lot for him to do. So we're glad the season's done. I'm hoping we make some good signings and Ten Hag can do something with what we have going forward. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell.
Gotcha. I'm not sure which side of this exercise would be shorter or easier. But which players do you think are definitely safe, or which players do you think are definitely out the door?
There's a long list who are definitely out the door, right? So Matic, we know, is going. Juan Mata, actually, I thought Juan Mata would definitely be going, but he may be staying on in a coaching-type capacity or like a player-coach capacity, I'm not sure. Lingard is going. We'll get rid of Phil Jones. We'll get rid of Pogba is going. Anthony Martial will probably go. He's coming back from loan from Sevilla, but will probably go. We'll be looking to sell on Wan-Bissaka and get someone in there. Did I say Phil Jones? He'll be off. Dean Henderson's probably going to go. You could start reeling off quite a lot of players. And when you start doing that, when you start taking these players out, you end up with like central midfield being seriously not just understocked in terms of numbers, but also quality. So we'll end up with Fred and McTominay as our only two senior midfielders, because we're going to lose Pogba, we're going to lose Matic. I don't put Bruno Fernandes in there as a sort of central midfielder. He's more like that number 10 attacking midfielder or coming in from wide. So he's more of an attacker. There's a lot of areas where you see players will probably leave. You've got Eric Bailly, who's still at the club. He'll probably go. I think there's a ton of players. Cavani's going to be leaving for sure. Who else? Yeah, there's a lot going on there, right, in terms of outgoings.
And then you could argue, like I said, you could argue anyone is at risk of being sold. I don't think anyone is. Like Cristiano Ronaldo might decide to leave. I mean, if it was up to me, I would definitely keep him. But he may decide to leave because he wants to have one final shot in the Champions League with someone. I don't know who that might be. You'd say you have to keep Jadon Sancho because we signed him for a lot of money and he does have that quality. Just we haven't used him well. Aside from those two, anybody really would be up for being transferred out. And like I said earlier, De Gea is only... He's only safe because the rest of the squad is so poor and needs to be addressed. So yeah, it's a lot of work for Ten Hag.
Mm. But in theory, a lot of money coming in, which could help fund Ten Hag's coming team. But you're not wrong. Ajax is a very well structured club and kind of self operates. And anybody that leaves it can have some issues, as some of our Palace friends will know. I very much wanted to bring in De Boer over Pochettino, and I would have looked like a tremendous idiot if that had happened. Maybe I already do. All right, Jake, we'll come to you to talk now about Newcastle. You mentioned earlier the fact that you were able to recover all the way to 11th, and basically just the back half of the season was both incredible on your end, but also maybe a testament to some iffiness in the quality of the Premier League. But a lot of people had you going down at the start of the season, at the midway point of the season. Obviously, you bring in Eddie Howe, you get the new ownership, you bring in several players, first-team players there in January. But just how impressed are you by the turnaround of what the perception was beforehand to where you finally ended up?
Yeah, it's been a great second half of the season. And it is easy to point to the money that was spent in January. It's definitely easy to do that. But at the turn of the year, Newcastle were 19th and had won one game in the first 19 matches. Like, that is relegation form times 100. That is just relegation. You can't be good doing that. And the second half of the season, in our final 19 games, we came out third out of every single team. So, shows the turnaround. And it is easy to point to the money. But even with money, that turnaround from 19th to third, like, people say 100 million is not that much to spend anymore. We've seen Manchester United spend that. We've seen Everton spend that. And to go mid-season without a pre-season on your style, to go from being the 19th best team in the league to the third best team in the league, it is an incredible turnaround, and one I don't think we've seen in the Premier League before. So it's definitely the money's a factor, the takeover's a factor. And I'm sure for the next 3 to 4 years while I'm calling this podcast, the money's definitely going to be a factor in our achievements. But it's not the only factor. Eddie Howe's done an incredible job. He's sort of proven his critics wrong. He's gone from being the man that relegated Bournemouth, a manager that Steve Bruce sort of poked fun at when he was at Newcastle, saying, oh, everyone, you know, what about the guy that relegated Bournemouth? How am I compared to him? He sort of put that in a comment. And it's chalk and cheese. He's an incredible young English manager. Graham Potter gets a lot of plaudits. So I think Eddie Howe's right up there with him, if not better. It's incredible to stay off from that position. I think there was a point where when a lot of these sort of predictors had Newcastle sort of 84% to go down, and the money helped. But even the money, Trippier has been out injured for much of his time here. He's probably played about 7 or 8 games. Bruno Guimaraes didn't really start until we were outside of the relegation zone. Chris Wood has scored 2 goals. It's not like these players have come in and absolutely ripped it up. They've played their part, but they've not absolutely been incredible. Aside from Bruno Guimaraes for the last 3 months, he's definitely one of the best midfielders in the league. I think I'd only look at City and perhaps argue that he might not get into that team, but the rest of every single other team in the league he'd get into. I don't think it's that much of a conversation. Hopefully we get more players like that. I think even if we look back to when Eddie Howe took over, I think we're sixth in the league in that period. So if you think we're going to, part of that time was without the January signing, if we sign 4 or 5 quality players this summer, there is nothing stopping Newcastle challenging for European positions next season. I think as a fan, I sort of thought it's going to be a slow process to build up to that. But if you look at the season alone and what's happened since Eddie Howe took over, I don't think it's going to be that I don't think it's going to be that much of a slow process. I think that we can be right up there next season. I think we finished 11th after sort of not even playing for half the season. 19th after 19 games, we finished 11th. If we, obviously, the second half of the season, we've had our fortune. It's probably unlikely we're going to replicate that form. But even if we sort of have a little bit against us, there's nothing stopping us challenging that sort of 6th or 7th spot, perhaps even higher, depending on the quality of player we bring in. So yeah, it's been an incredible half season, and I think Newcastle are probably one of the most forward progressing teams in the league. I don't think there's going to be a team that progresses more than Newcastle over the next 5 or 6 seasons. Yep, that's down to who owns the club, but it's inevitable. And I think next season's going to be a very good one. And I'd be surprised if we didn't finish in the top 8.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is fair. The other big turning point was obviously switching Joelinton's position from a striker that couldn't score to Moussa Dembele 2.0. I just figured, especially because we kind of talked about it a little bit pre-show, that you probably just want a soapbox to talk a little about Joelinton. So here it is.
Yeah, I think this has been one of the stories of the Premier League, I think, of a player signed, £40 million, a club record signing, sort of flopping as a centre forward at Newcastle, and to have the mentality to bounce back from that and then progress under a new manager. He Joelinton is a player that I think he spends a lot of time with analysts from Brazil, sort of working on his game over Skype and whatnot. And he's a player that's quite serious. A lot of Newcastle players are giving up on him. A lot of Newcastle fans are giving up on him. And now he has probably one of the most well-known chants he's sung about so often. He's he really should be considered for the Brazilian World Cup squad. I'm not even exaggerating on that. He's been one of the best players in the Premier League post November. I think he does lead the tackles and interceptions during that time. He's had such a great half season. This is a player that has played as a centre forward or as a wide forward for all of his career, and he's done so well as a central midfielder. Today it sort of ended on a sour note for him. He got stretched off after about 20 minutes with quite a deep cut on his leg, but it seems that it is a deep cut, and it's not going to be something that rules him out long term, and he'll be back for pre-season. So yeah, it's been great. It's such a good season. And I've always been quite a fan of him, even when it was going poorly. I could sort of see that the physical attributes he had, he was quite good in the air. He always worked hard, pressed high. He just needed a coach that built a system that got the best out of him, and he has that now. He was never a centre forward. He's still very poor in the opposition area. I think he's got 4 or 5 goals this season, but that's an area of the game he's not good at. But yeah, the Moussa Dembele comparison. He's got a long way to go to sort of match what Dembele did in the Premier League, but there's comparisons there. Dembele started as a centre forward. He sort of got moved back and became very good at winning the ball back, recovering the ball, and sort of being that heartbeat of the team. And I think Joelinton's definitely on the same journey. Trippier spoke about both of them and sort of drawn those comparisons too. And he's a player that's played with both of them. So yeah, he's had a great, great season, deserving Newcastle Player of the Year, and probably deserving of still a lot more plaudits and respect league-wide than he's got. But yeah, he's had a great half season, and he's a player that he's one that I could progressive Newcastle. If we go up into the Europa League and Champions League, I think he's definitely going to be there with us. And there's not going to be many that complete that journey. But yeah, he's definitely one of them.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, certainly curious to see how his progression continues to go, but certainly turn things around for himself and potentially his long-term career future there. Okay, I figure we'll wrap up by talking a little player watch. And I just wanted to ask you guys which position you'd most like your club to strengthen for next season.
I think everywhere. Oh no! I think if I had to pick one, I would just love for us to get in a proper central midfielder. So when you look at the team that we have, like Matic, if you put Matic, Fred, and McTominay together, took their attributes and put them into one, that would be like one very good midfielder. It's just that they're all unfortunately three players. Like Matic's passing has improved a lot since he's at the club, and he's like the best passer in that midfield trio. Fred has got good work rate, but he's like a complete just liability. His passing isn't so great. And then McTominay's got good sort of physical attributes, and again, he's got good aggression. So you put all that together, work rate, good passing, and aggression, you've probably got a pretty good midfielder. It's just a shame that it's in three of them. So I would definitely look at, if we could strengthen that area properly, I think that would be a really good start for us. I just think it was an area of massive weakness, and we should have brought someone in last year. So for me, that's got to be a high priority. But when you look through the squad, Cristiano Ronaldo is our starting striker, 38. So you know that we have an issue there. Look, we discussed Mason Greenwood in a previous podcast. He shouldn't play for the club again. So, but what that does mean is there is a gap there as well, right? So in terms of those attacking positions, especially when you consider the drop-off from Rashford. So you've got to look at those areas. So yeah, those two probably the biggest priorities, but you could argue any position needs to be strengthened. Like just everywhere across the whole pitch, we have serious issues in terms of quality and quantity. So as I said earlier, Ten Hag, he's just got a lot of work to do. But certainly that midfield, central midfield area would be my number one priority, given we're like at current, as things stand. We would we're heading into next season with Fred and McTominay as our only central midfielders. They shouldn't be anywhere near the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think for Newcastle, it's definitely a striker. If Callum Wilson could stay fit for a season, I don't think it'd be as much of a priority. But as he cannot, it's definitely a position we need to strengthen. I think Chris Wood has done his job, but he's not going to take us where we want to go. I have it on fairly good authority that Newcastle in talks with Darwin Nunez, Alexander Isak, or Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So I wouldn't be surprised to see one of those join. I think the talks have already started with each of them, or at least with their agent. So it's definitely the position that Newcastle are trying to strengthen. I can see the sort of the value of each of them. Obviously, Nunez is a player that is touted as one of the next future starts. That'd be a massive coup. Isak has sort of gone off the radar a little bit. He's had a quite poor season, but he's got all the physical attributes to do well in the Premier League and Calvert-Lewin, so everything they're going to need to sell. And he sort of has similar attributes to Callum Wilson. Still down to his injury record as well. So I definitely think a striker's going to be high on the agenda for us. I think we're going to try and sign probably three or four players of that calibre. And maybe a couple of younger players, because we have been short of young players this season. We've got quite an old squad. We don't have many players that are developing. In January, we tried to sign Ekitike from, I think it's Rennes or somebody like that. So yeah, I think a couple of players like that, he may come in. That's a player that's been heavily linked. He's sort of a wide forward, centre forward, compared to Mbappe. So yeah, be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, definitely strikers. We need more goals in the team. It's been the thing we've been lacking. And there's definitely been movement on that made already. So I'd expect something like that to come in. And that's probably the biggest weakness. Sort of somebody to support and compete with Callum Wilson. And somebody to play the majority of the games when he's out.
Gotcha. Well, I hope both of you are able to fill those holes in your squads. And with that, it's a wrap, both for this episode and for the season at large. There will be one more show, the split one with Dave Hendrick over at EPL Index and the Anfield Index. That'll be coming in about a week or so. But for now, thanks so much to Jake and to Josh and to every guest that came on throughout the season. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.